So this is our Saturday night after Wampra, and some have been up late last night. We had a talk last night as well, and tomorrow in celebration of Ajahn Chah's birthday, yes, we'll have another informal talk and perhaps see some video recordings of Lumpur Cha. So a lot of teachings. I was thinking a bit about Lumpur Cha's character, and one of the things that comes through so much in his biography and just in Lumpur Pasno speaking about him and the tales we hear about Lumpur Cha is how absolutely incredibly steadfastly he pursued the spiritual life and pursued the Buddha's teachings. And so I was just thinking about, as we were chanting tonight about the Eightfold Path, and the second path factor is right intention. And it's important, I think, to reflect on these, because the word intention can mean so many things, but specifically the Buddha, and I'm just going to focus on the first one, was talking about the intention towards nekama, so in Pali, and that is renunciation. So that is towards the renouncing the worldly aims that we can have and moving towards more of the spiritual aims, not just more of, but just moving towards that and abandoning what the worldly aims are in our life. So we are all here tonight practicing nekama. This is a Saturday night. It's often a time that people are either with their families or they're going out with their friends, kicking back, finding some entertainment, might be using drugs or alcohol, whatever it might be. It's just sort of worldly pleasures. It's pleasures usually based on sensuality, appeasing the senses, feeling good in that way. And so what is quite amazing is that it's so easy to move in a worldly direction, and yet there is this intention that everyone in this room has towards moving into the spiritual direction, moving away from that kind of pleasure, giving it up, abandoning it. And so I think that's why the Buddha made this so important, that we are really doing something that's not only great, excellent, and for our own benefit, but also incredibly difficult, because the tendency towards the worldly is so, it's just so easy to fall back on or to be addicted to. Just now, Anagarika Shan gave a request for a Dhamma talk, and then as I remember doing when I gave one of my first requests as well, or trying it in a different manner, I just completely lost, right around where Sean actually lost it. And then I thought, okay, like when I was listening to Anagarika Shan, I thought, okay, his intention is very beautiful, and this is just part of it, just making mistakes is very normal in life. But the spiritual aspect in that mistake-making, in that having that intention towards the Dhamma, is that we are also abandoning blame. We're abandoning disrepute. We're abandoning looking for others to think of ourselves as, having a good reputation, or like we say, fame, not having loss, not making a mistake, not sort of screwing up. So this is all the spiritual intention. We might say, oh, I don't want to do anything embarrassing in front of anyone. And of course, that's completely natural. I mean, many of us have heard that on a scale of fear, most people are more afraid of public speaking than they are of death. At least that's by self-report. So this renunciation, this nekama, it's incredibly important. And so we have to actually make an intention towards it. We have to remind ourselves. And, I was thinking about this sense of what we do sometimes to renounce the world, like for monks and nuns or any lay people who are interested, they shave their heads, or not necessarily shave a head, but just reduce the hair from being something as a statement of beauty. And this is not very, very easy to do. But then in a monastery, I would say that's not true at all. Like for myself, my own experience, the only thing I find is just laziness comes up. I don't want to shave my head, or I or like shave my face or something. But otherwise, it's sort of like, it's just so easy. It's so normal because I'm surrounded by people that do the same thing. And then it's also seen as just like, if I didn't do it, it would be very odd and strange. So why I'm bringing this up is also a sense that we need to be careful with those things that, as we're giving them up, they don't become just sort of a rote experience, you know, something that's just like no longer present for us. Certain things like a aditana, we make determinations to give something up, to stop doing it, but then it loses its kind of specialness because it just becomes normal for us. And so we're wanting to kind of really up our game as much as possible and just see how often there are times when we're not making that intention towards the spiritual life, towards renunciation. Another very good word is sangwara, so like relinquishing, giving up. And we heard, the word adjacent to that, pahana, which is like abandoning. I'm sorry, sangwara is restraint, and abandoning is relinquishing is more pahana. So with sangwara, you know, we're really trying to put into practice a pulling ourselves back, holding ourselves from unwholesome tendencies. And so, again, we can do that. We can practice that sangwara in a very rote way, or we can do it in a way that we're tending to feel that resistance. I don't want to actually not do this. I want to follow with saying something that I know is not going to be beneficial, saying something out of anger. And so I might recognize that, and that's a very important aspect, just the recognition that I'm going to do something that's unwholesome. But then not doing it, not practicing that sangwara is quite difficult. So that sort of practicing of restraint is something that we want to really try to bring into our practice all the time. I often think about this when I come back from having put food in my bowl and I have an intention towards like living the spiritual life and not moving towards greed at all, you know. And then I come back and I say, wow, how much of this bowl is filled with my greed? And so I check that and I see that, then we go through this chant of, not for fun, not for pleasure, not for fattening, not for beautification. And then it's there. It's like, it's a reminder, right? Okay. And then we have a chance, when I'm doing this, I have a chance. Okay. Well, if I've overshot things or I had greed when I was taking food, I need to now exercise that restraint. And so there's always a chance to sort of recover. There's always a chance to be able to still benefit from what's going on. And these are very hard things to give up. Just think about somebody praising us and how nice that feels. Somebody praises you and there's just this feeling of, oh, that's so nice. I'm happy somebody appreciates me and cares about me. But when this becomes a need, like I need you to praise me, or I can't be happy, That's then moving towards the world. And so we want to still be very careful. That doesn't mean that somebody praises us and we tell them, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm just a terrible person. That's not very helpful either. But it's just kind of, we can be a witness to that experience without then having it as an addiction for us to be seeking praise from everyone we're with or from as many people as we can. And the same is true for blame. And it's so strange to think of them as just the same thing, just a different side of one coin. But yet, how many of us want to, be blamed for something, be told that we're doing something wrong or to question, like our motivation, that we might be doing something in an unwholesome way. And so it's very hard, but that's a teaching for us. That's something that we can kind of open to and witness and allow in. A few of us were talking the other day, and I appreciated, we were in a group talking about communication, and I appreciated one of the statements that was made around the desire just not to really be open to particular emotional states or if something arises that's difficult with another person that's present, just to want to be like, okay, I want to get out of here as quickly as possible or out of this situation, which is very natural. It's quite protective for us. It's very normal to want to kind of protect ourselves socially. But we need to be really careful about, what our motivation is around that, because then we're running away. You know, it's often running away from something that is unpleasant, which is, another one of those worldly winds, the seeking of the pleasant and the running away from the unpleasant. So when I think about Lumbur Cha in this way, I just think about how incredible of a life he lived, just continually pursuing the spiritual path, this nekama, and really renouncing the world and doing so in what I see for myself as it's quite, it would provide a fair amount of, and provides sometimes when I can rise up to it, a fair amount of dukkha, a fair amount of pain that arises just because it's causing me to give up the worldly things that I'm still attached to. And so that's kind of the import of the Buddha's teachings, and then the really what's so special about what Lumbur Cha left for us. And even though it can be quite intimidating reading how much he pursued these things. And when I think of this biography that's being written about Lumbur Pasano, it's a similar sense I have of like just having gone to Thailand and seeing the places that Lumbur started as monasteries or he lived in or when he practiced in the early days at Wat Pa Phong or Wat Phananchat or being on Tudong. It's like, it's sort of a sense of, oh, I wish or I hope I can continue to have an interest in that kind of letting go, that abandoning. Right now, there's been some training up for a one-week Tudong that four of the members of the community are going on, and Ajahn Yaniko is leading. And it's sort of I think Ajahn's been calling it a Tudong training trip. And the thing I often hear from people who are interested in Tudong, and I should define that word, it's just sort of a faith walk. It's going and walking with a minimal amount of requisites and no food, and just hoping that people will feed those who are on this trip, walk each day at the allowable time in the morning. And so what monks have is their livelihood, is their bowl, the robes. And so they'll be present in situations in the morning, hopefully around some people who will be kind and generous. And this word Tudong, which is this activity of going for a walk, I believe it's a Thai word that's taken from the Pali word Dutanga. And Dutanga, I believe, means shaking off. And it's really shaking off those tendencies towards worldly qualities, those things that we haven't quite let go of. And so this act of going on Tudong is very special, very courageous. But what's interesting to me is I think for some monastics who haven't tried to do this, there's a romantic idea about what it's like, going off outside the monastery, a more schedule and, open road, all, doing my thing and enjoying myself and perhaps some good conversations. But even just, I heard the last walk they did was a 14-mile walk, just a training day, and it was like almost reaching 100 degrees. And it's, I've done two Tudongs, and one of them was pretty good. It wasn't too unpleasant, but the other one, I just ended up destroying my feet, had to actually stop and stay in one place for a while, recovering. And it's very, it's not... I mean, there's that nice quality of people feeding one. That's really special. If you're not going to be fed by someone and they do that for you, it's an incredibly uplifting feeling, the feeling of relief. But then a lot of the time, it's just sort of somebody says something that wasn't you took to be not so nice, or you say something and you regret it, or somebody's walking too fast, or somebody's walking too slow. It's too hot. It's too cold. I didn't bring enough of this. I brought too much of that. My shoulders are in pain. My hips are in pain. My feet are in pain. My whatever. This was not what I imagined. And so this is the nekama just being met right there. The intention of, okay, what is my intention to give up the worldly pleasures, the sense of just like taking it easy, having a good time, or is it to see what, as Ajahn Yaniko was talking about last night, that sense of auton, that patient endurance, Can I bear with this? Can I be with this? You know, do I have to consistently be trying to seek some sort of pleasure out of a situation or run away from something that's unpleasant? And so that really becomes our sense of what sangwara, what restraining ourselves is really about. Like, we're doing it for a purpose. We're keeping ourselves from the unwholesome for a purpose. We are giving up the worldly things for a purpose. That is, you know, how far can I actually be just okay with whatever is, whatever I'm experiencing? And we don't do this by just thinking about it, or we don't do this by just kind of like hoping it's going to happen. We use everything in our experience in order to move towards the spiritual, our spiritual goals, and give up the worldly aims, and continue to do that as often as we can. And it's just not easy. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. And I'm grateful that the Buddha, Lamurcha, Rupasno, many teachers, they never say, "Oh, it's easy, don't worry about it." No, it's the hardest thing one can actually do. And it also has, of course, for the hardest thing one can do, it has the highest benefit one can have in the world. And so this is just a short talk, because we've had a fair amount of busyness these last 2 days. Another day of I'll have a work day tomorrow, and then another day of sort of celebrating our teacher. And I just wanted to encourage people to bring this into focus, this intention towards our spiritual life, and have a sense that it's always something we're needing to rise up to. It's something that I see for myself as needing to bring myself towards every minute, each hour of the day. It's just like it doesn't kind of turn into an automatic experience. And so that lifting up, that rising up to what might be difficult, but what has the greatest benefit, is where I think that intention towards nekama is most beneficial. You want to?